Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. I am so glad you are here today because I have a great show for you. Yes, I do. What I have for you is an inside scoop of what happened behind the scenes of the Attorney General Ken Paxton case where he just got acquitted. And joining me today is John O'Shea. He's running for Congress and he's a really good friend of Ken Paxton. So that's coming on the show today. So please like, share, and subscribe. Please send the show far and wide. And if you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com and hit the donate button right there. Or you can be a $5 monthly subscriber at going to theambermayshow.locals.com. That's theambermayshow.locals.com. Hey, and I always add more content, so join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. On Telegram, I'm on True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, and ClubHub. But I just want to let you know, I always partner with patriotic businesses to help save you money. These are businesses that are like-minded like you and I, and they have offered you a discount. And I want to just highlight the Commander's artist. So Christmas is around the corner. It's not too far coming up. Go check out his artwork. He's a good friend of General Flynn. His artwork is incredible. And you can find him at thecommandersartist.com. And when you use promo code Amber, you're going to save some money there. So that's thecommandersartist.com. Use promo code Amber at checkout and check the links below in the description. Or go to my website at theambermayshow.com and hit the promo section. And you can see all of the businesses that are offering you a discount just because you're a loyal listener of the Amber May Show. So I'm excited about today's show. I hope you really like it. So joining me right now is John O'Shea, and we're going to see what he has to say about behind the scenes of the Ken Paxton case. John O'Shea joining us today on the Amber May Show. I'm really excited to have you on the show. I'm so thankful that you've made time out of your day.
No, I appreciate you having me on. It's nice to meet you.
Well, so you're from Texas and you're running for Congress there. So lots of stuff is happening in Texas. The Ken Paxton thing was huge, being exonerated from all of those charges. Can you give us some insight on all of that Ken Paxton stuff that just went down in Texas?
Sure. Well, Ken and I have been friends for about 20 years. When he was first elected to the House, he was put on the House Banking and Finance Committee. And at that point, I was a community banker. And so he asked his personal banker, hey, who are the people I need to meet in my district? And fortunately, he gave him my name. And we've been steadfast friends ever since. So what happened here is basically it's kind of this uniparty attempt to try and take out America First. So President Trump's biggest ally and strongest America First champion here in the state of Texas has always been Ken Paxton. In fact, it was Ken who filed the motion with the suit in the Supreme Court, challenging the elections of the swing state that actually in 2020 that didn't follow their own election laws unconstitutionally. Mm-hmm. And he's often pushed back on, the Obama and the Biden administrations for their unconstitutional measures, and has just long been kind of the person, the watchman on the wall, pushing back against illegitimate, overreaches. So what happened here was that Ken had a campaign donor, a gentleman by the name of Nate Paul, who was a developer in Austin. Well, I don't know Mr. Paul, and so I don't presume to speak for him and his motives, but having been in community banking for 20 years, he kind of met people like this before, and he made a big splash in a short time. And then, like I said, he gave some money to Ken's campaign, like he gave money to a number of campaigns. And while it was a significant amount of money, $25,000, I mean, Ken's campaign that cycle raised $8 million. So it wasn't like it was an over, large portion of the money he raised. But then Nate Paul became the subject of an FBI investigation. He was involved in some litigation with a a charitable organization, unless somebody think, well, oh my gosh, the guy was fighting with the charity. Well, that charitable organization had actually been under a couple of criminal indictments itself. So I don't know that there was clearly a white hat and a black hat in this argument. But when this occurred, the FBI raided Nate Paul's offices and his home, and Mr. Paul felt like his civil liberties were violated. He didn't get a copy of the search warrant. He had reason to believe that the warrant was altered, and that he basically alleged that there were civil rights violations. And Ken, being somebody who's an advocate for all the rights of all the citizens of the state of Texas, took it seriously. And there were people in his office that felt like he shouldn't get involved, or that the office of the attorney general should just basically kind of give a clear runway to the FBI. We kind of see how that's been working out for us over the last several years. So it escalated to where he actually hired a outside independent counsel, which, if anything, I would think would speak to the fact that, you know, he didn't want to be unduly influenced or have the appearance of influence. And apparently this independent counsel was doing such an effective job that the county, Travis County, that where the original request had raised, actually made a second referral to the independent counsel direct. So what ends up happening is you have the Texas House, which is led by Republicans, supposedly Republican, but unfortunately too much more of the establishment types, corroborating with the Department of Justice. In fact, there had been a secret investigation going on into Ken's activities that was unbeknownst to the public. To show you the level of coordination, there was a woman named Erin Epley who was at the Department of Justice, who the same week that she resigned from the Department of Justice, magically got hired by this secret investigative committee by the House. Well, they did their investigation in secrecy. They didn't have any witnesses under oath. And then at the end of the legislative session, which the Texas legislature only meets every 2 years, and it's only for 140 days, they made a surprise announcement that there was going to be an impeachment hearing on Ken. And then they rushed it through on the last day with a 4-hour public hearing in which investigators who weren't under oath interviewed witnesses who weren't under oath. The investigators reported back to the secret committee who wasn't under oath. And then they reported to the House without being under oath. And we were all just told, hey, you have to believe us. Well, there's an an inconvenient truth for them there, which is there's a Texas code that is Texas Code 665. It's the prior election doctrine, which says that any information that was known to the public prior to an election cannot be used for the impeachment of that elected official. Well, everything that Ken was alleged to have done had been played out in the media during the 2022 election cycle. Trust me, Ken drew several Republican primary challengers, including, interestingly enough, George P. Bush, Jeb's son. And so, as it turned out, all of this had tens of millions of dollars spent educating the public on Ken's supposed misdeeds. And it didn't matter. The Texas voters overwhelmingly voted for Ken. He received close to 4.3 million votes. One in the primary, one in the primary runoff, crushing George P. Bush, and then he won in the general election. So the House seemed that they didn't care about that. They rushed an impeachment through. Unfortunately, you had 60 Republicans side with 61 Democrats to impeach in this unprecedented kangaroo manner. It went to the Senate. The Senate heard 2 weeks of testimony under oath. Big difference this time. And as a result of that, the impeachment vote came well short. In fact, a majority of the state senators actually voted to acquit Ken. And so finally, after this abomination of justice that had been done since May, Ken actually spends today back in the office of the attorney general where the voters of the state wanted him.
Wow, that is so much to unpack. I mean, that is unreal. I mean, I would say it's hard to believe, but it's really not in this day and time that we're living in. And by design, they want all these great America First people out of office because you can't have your swampy swampness when you have actual good people who actually care about our country sitting in office. So, you know, I keep going back to seeing a video of Hillary Clinton saying, we need to pack the courts. And I'm thinking, I look back now, I'm like, they didn't just pack courts. They packed every political office you can think of, from mayor, right, city council, all the way up to governor, all the way up to, you know, Congress. So I was actually really proud of Ken Paxton. He doesn't know me. I don't know him personally, but seeing how he was filing lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit on behalf of not just the people of Texas, but I took it as on behalf of me, because
for the country,
he was trying,
right,
to fight for those people's rights, especially during COVID, the election fraud that happened in Arizona. I mean, all the things he was fighting for, I felt like he was fighting for me.
Yep.
I had a lot of respect for Ken.
Well, look, I can tell you, Ken is a very principled person and has a strong backbone. And he shares a lot of similarities with President Donald J. Trump. And one of which is he actually does what he says he's going to do. And the other being that he actually concerns himself with the average, you know, working class or middle class people in the state. He isn't just worried about the donor class. And so, you know, he poses a great threat, like you said, that kind of swampy establishment. And I agree. I mean, he was targeted specifically for that. Look, it's not a coincidence that he was just starting to take on the vaccine mandates and starting to investigate Moderna and Pfizer. It's not a coincidence that he had just ruled that, you know, child transitioning was mutilation and, you know, child abuse. And it's also not a coincidence that we actually have now the 14th Amendment argument being made about why President Trump shouldn't be allowed to run on the 2024 ballot, because the other side doesn't care about voter suppression. They cry voter suppression all the time when they say, well, you can't require somebody to have an ID or you can't do signature check. But in Ken's situation, they didn't care what 4.3 million voters went to the polls and said they wanted for their attorney general. They wanted to be able to overturn it, mm-hmm, based on this false narrative that, mm-hmm, they crafted, the Bushies and the establishment in D.C. through the Department of Justice, coordinated with the media, who filed a hit story after hit story after Ken. But here he is back stronger than ever.
I want you to go into a little bit more with the Bushes, if you can, because I really don't know much about the tie with the Bushes and Ken Paxton. So right, can you elaborate on that for me? Because I'm just trying, I have very high surface level knowledge, but really nothing that profound. So could you explain that a little bit further for me?
Sure. Well, look, I, kind of on my political journey, I first of all, I'd never actually envisioned running for office, but felt a calling to do so, you know, mm-hmm, to whom much is given, much is required. And I hated the direction this country was heading. But, you know, I'll be the first to admit that one of the biggest problems in this country is that the voters, you know, have been asleep, and we've just been kind of fat, dumb, and happy, and, mm-hmm, not really paying attention. If it was, mm-hmm, a Republican or a Democrat, that was fine by us. Well, it turns out that there were really a different type of Republican that was kind of the controlled opposition and part of the establishment. So when George W. Bush was in office, or George Herbert Walker Bush Sr. was in office, you know, I kind of viewed him as a champion of the Republican cause. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that he had single-handedly kind of bailed out the Chinese Communist Party regime after the Tiananmen Square incident and had set things in motion to where they would join the World Trade Organization. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand that he had been kind of part of this establishment ruling class. And then when George W. Bush was elected, you know, I thought that he was a good guy. I thought that, mm-hmm, he was championing, you know, the American interest and protecting us against terrorism.
Yep.
And lo and behold, I had no idea what the Patriot Act had done and how he had been eroding our civil liberties and had just been another continuation of this establishment. So they felt like the party in the state of Texas was theirs. They didn't like that Ken was challenging the establishment. They didn't like the fact that the base had moved from the establishment to this America First movement. And they tried to kneecap him in essence. And I think the final blow for them, as far as the gloves coming off against Ken, was when George P. Bush ran against him and Ken crushed him. It went to a runoff and Ken crushed him by over 30 points and effectively ending George P. Bush's political career. So I think this was like a last ditch effort, but, you know, the Bushes here have worked with kind of the, you know, the establishment part of things and have been really a part of the problem in the state of Texas for the last several years and really not part of the solution.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey, so when you are a guest at the Amber Mae's house, you get luxury. And how you get luxury is I have this sleeping couch, this sleeper sofa, and you're telling me that's not luxury. It is when you put a MyPillow mattress topper on it. All my guests that have come over and stayed at my house have really enjoyed this sleeper sofa, which says a lot because they're getting to sleep on the MyPillow pillows. And you get the MyPillow mattress topper, and then it doesn't stop there with the luxury, because when you shower at the Amber Mae Show's house, you get to have a MyPillow towel. I don't have the kids using it. I just let the adults have the luxury, so the adults get to use the MyPillow, and they're phenomenal. And right now, there's a massive sale going on with the MyPillow towels. So you should really put luxury into your home and live it every day like Amber Mae does every day. So I have a MyPillow mattress topper on my bed. I use the MyPillow sheets, the MyPillow towels, the MyPillow slippers. I live luxury and I don't have to pay the luxury price because MyPillow has promo code. So use my name, Amber, and save up to 66% off, and you can live luxurious as well.
Hello, this is Tanya Joy from Beauty for Ashes, and you are watching The Amber Mae Show.
Hey friends, I want to tell you what I recently did. I broke away from the big three. I was tired of the woke mobile, and I wanted to go to a Christian conservative company that I could trust that support the organizations that I value, and that is Patriot Mobile. So when you go to patriotmobile.com/Amber, you are going to get free activation. It is super easy to get started to switch from the big three to Patriot Mobile. They'll walk you step by step. It is not difficult at all. And I've had tremendous service since I made the switch. So I recommend if you want to vote with your wallet and support a company that supports your values, go to patriotmobile.com/Amber and save on a free activation. So that's patriotmobile.com/Amber. Now the links are in the description below or on my website at theambermayshow.com/promo. So check that out. So it's time to vote with our wallet, ditch the woke mobile, and go to a Christian conservative mobile. And that is patriotmobile.com/Amber. You are listening to the Amber Mae Show, and now we return to the show already in progress. You know what I have come to the conclusion is they are trying to take down the state of Texas like they are taking down the state of Arizona. Yep. State of Arizona is a very red state, despite what the news media tells you that it sure. is. What do they call us?
Purple.
A purple state. Yeah, we're not that. We're a battleground state. No, we're not. We're a very red state still, especially Maricopa County. And I talked to Tina Peters 2 weeks ago, and we were at the same event, and I interviewed her, and she said something to me, and it just signified everything that I started to believe to be true. She said how she found the election fraud was from a city, a municipality race. And then when she dug into that, then she found out, wow, 2020 was tampered with too.
Yep.
So what I see them doing is they go after the mayor and the city council and they win those cities, and then they go after the county, and then they start going after the state. And so I know you have a problem called Austin, Texas, and Austin, Texas, supposedly this blue city. Dallas is supposedly a blue city. I just have a really hard time believing that about Texas, because I know Texas is a very cowboy state. Everything's bigger in Texas. There's a lot of American loving people in Texas. I have a really hard time now because I don't believe the city of Phoenix is a blue city. Right. I think they've captured our cities, our big cities. And then from there, they just move on. And so the election fraud is, so no one thinks to look into a city municipality election. Nobody thinks about that. Like people don't think that they tamper with a small little city. How do you think they start changing things if they don't start small? It's what I love about what General Flynn says. Local action creates national impact. What do you think they've been doing? Local action with getting in and interfering in the city elections. What do you think they're doing with Ken Paxton? They're trying to take him out by his knees. What do you think they're trying to do with Donald Trump? They already stole 2020 from him. And now he's such a threat that they're going after him with all these fake
indictments, fake indictments, just like they did with Ken Paxton.
Yep.
I mean, if they can do it to a president and they can do it to an attorney general, can you imagine what they could do to me, to you, to the little guy?
No, 100%. I mean, one of the things that, you know, President Trump has repeatedly said, and I think he's 100% spot on, that they're not after him, they're after us. He just happens to be in the way. And in fact, that's why I am running for Congress, because the congressman who currently represents our district has been there for 27 years, and she's not only proven to be part of the solution, she's proven to be part of the problem. She has not stood up for or defended President Trump when he was under attack. And in fact, I would say that the efforts to nullify his election actually predates even him being sworn in. It started with the whole Russian collusion hoax and the whole Spygate. So, you know, they can't have outsiders who are going to actually do what they say they're going to do, go into the rooms and represent the will of the people, because then it threatens to unmask these people for who they are. And it threatens, look, I know for myself, I mean, in you know, 2017, I thought, oh my gosh, he was right. He actually was capable of doing these things. We were actually capable of bringing manufacturing jobs back on shore, good paying jobs that actually can support a family on one income. He was actually able to lock down the borders, and even without the help of Congress, because of the Paul Ryan wing of the establishment, you know, working against him. He got a border wall being built, and he got a Remain in Mexico policies put in place. You know, he renegotiated trade deals, and then he, you know, righted past wrongs. He forged new peace treaties. He refused to get involved and engaged in new wars, and in fact was, you know, trying to roll back our involvement in military engagement in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was exposing the fact that America really had been managed in its decline by our ruling elites for the last decades, and that it didn't have to be this way. Mm-hmm. And likewise, while he obviously didn't have kind of the legislative ability to kind of do those types of things, he did get a chance to push back on all the unconstitutional measures that were coming out of both D.C. and Austin. And he had proven to be quite effective. In fact, I think he had filed, last time I'd heard, over 50 suits against the Biden administration and was winning it over a clip of 90. In fact, one of his biggest things that he talks about, going back to the election integrity, was that he had to fight 12 different lawsuits where they were trying to get mass mail-in voting for the 2020 election in Texas, similar to what they did in Georgia.
And in Arizona.
And he took all 12 of them to the state Supreme Court, and he went 12-0. And so we actually had, by and large, fair elections in the state of Texas. Supposedly, we had Trump lose by a few thousand votes in my district. And I just refuse to believe that, because
I don't believe that they're coming after Texas. I know, because I'm seeing what they've done in my state, and I'm watching what's happening in your state. They're coming after your state. Pretty soon you're going to be a purple state. Then you're going to turn to a blue state. I mean, they call me a battleground state. We are not a battleground state. If you listen to Seth Keschel during an Arizona legislative hearing, he breaks down the numbers. The numbers don't lie about the trends of voting and who's registered in what counties. I mean, he was brilliant with his, and it's on my website. If you go to theambermayshow.com, hit the resource tab, and you go to Maricopa election audit, I think that's what it's called. You'll see his presentation that he gave in front of the Arizona legislature in a hearing that he gave. We're not a battleground state, despite all these California people are coming. Honestly, a lot of them are conservatives. They're just so tired of the BS in California.
They're fleeing, the oppression.
Yes, they are fleeing the oppression. And so what I'm looking at, and it hurts my heart, because I love Texas. If I didn't live here, I'd live in Texas. There's something about Texas I just really like. I don't know if it's the Cowboys, I'm not sure, but I love Texas. And so to see Texas start slowly falling is really upsetting me. So what I appreciate about Ken Paxton is at least he has the people in his state have the highest law enforcement officer there is to protect him and their rights. Here in Arizona, not so much. Right. Our attorney general really failed, and as far as I feel, our last attorney general really failed with election integrity. And then we now have another one that's a Democrat. I mean, I don't really feel like she is going to represent and protect my constitutional rights. I just don't believe that because I don't believe our election was free and fair. When I break it down to really what happened in Arizona in the 22 election, everyone knew that the Republicans were going to come out in person, same day voting. And on that day, almost right as soon as the polls open, just about, the machines start failing. Mm-hmm. And then they tell us we can go check in and check out. So if it's failing in one precinct, we can check out and go to another precinct. Well, most of the polling people didn't know how to check out anybody once they got checked in. So in theory, what could have happened, this is why we really should have redone the election. Someone could have nefariously been voting in all kinds of precincts because of the lack of check-in, check-out procedures being clear. And then if you didn't do that and you put it in box three, what they called it, which is adjudication, now you're expecting someone, you're really trusting that this person's going to vote the way you want to. Okay, so that's the other thing. Now, most of our ballots went into adjudication, most of them. That shouldn't be the case. Most of our ballots went to adjudication. On top of that, then you had our county, who didn't have chain of custody on the ballots, send our ballots to a third party called Runbeck. Mm-hmm. Why is it leaving the county property? Why is it leaving the county custody? I have no idea, but it goes to somewhere else. So we get ballots back, but we don't know how many we send them to know how many we should get back. So they could have installed more elections of ballots there, fraudulent ballots there. So that alone, maladministration, why aren't we getting a new election here in Arizona? We should have in Maricopa County at least. And then not only that, but the Secretary of State at the time, Katie Hobbs, was overseeing her own freaking election.
Yep.
And then to boot on that, she threatens two different county board of supervisors to look at the ballots. If you dare look at the ballots, I'm going to put you in prison. They were under duress. They didn't look at the ballots. They didn't want to go to prison. And here it's the most freest and fair election you'll ever see, right?
No, yeah, there's so likewise. Now I can say there's a lot to unpack there. You know, first of all, your attorney general should be Abe Hamadeh because he clearly won that. The second thing I would say is just on the face alone, you had those voting machines working perfectly fine during early voting. Correct. It's amazing that right after they got recertified, right before game day voting, which we all know who turns out for game day to make sure that their vote counts. That's when 60% of the voting systems went down. Mm-hmm. So I just that in and of itself demanded a new election because you can't say people who are waiting for 3 or 4 hours actually had the ability. Again, you know, the left always talks about voter suppression, but they're the ones who are guilty of implementing it. Mm-hmm. It just so happens, unfortunately, in Maricopa County, it was Republican establishment type who were working with the left. So yes. Bill Gates and those.
Exactly. People. And on top of that, you had a political action committee with Bill Gates and Stephen Richer against any America First candidates. Now, these two gentlemen are supposed to be overseeing our elections. Right. Yes. Thank you.
That's so prima facie.
All of this on its face doesn't make for a fair election. And they want me to believe, and they want the people of Maricopa and the people of Arizona to believe that they won their seats in the executive branch. Now look what they did in our election 2020. Every other office in the state was the majority was Republicans.
Right.
Now they cheated there too with the legislature because we redistricted and we picked up more Republican seats across the state after redistricting. Mm-hmm. And we still only have a one vote majority. So even in the legislative races, they were tampering with the vote because we should have had at least 2 or 3 more per house because of the redistricting, picking up more Republican areas. Now, every race except the executive branch was won by Republicans, including corporation commissions. All the other little tiny offices were won by the Republicans except the legislative. Why? Because Carrie Lake was going to stop the border issue. Carrie Lake had a plan to stop with the child rape trafficking because Carrie Lake wanted to solve the water issues because Carrie Lake was an America First candidate.
Right.
Like Carrie Lake had all the things that the people of Arizona wanted to to either improve or make better in our state. And so you go, but what's so frustrating is because I'm seeing what Ken Paxton went through with his establishment people. It's just one party. It's the uniparty. The Democrats and Republicans are the same people. They just, the Republicans are just quiet about helping out the other side with their plans. They're quiet about it and they help them. They don't hinder it. I just showed you what the Republican led County Board of Supervisors did here in Maricopa County. Right. I mean, they should have just said, okay, we're going to do re-election, plain and simple, done, be done with it. Instead, they have PACs, and instead they keep going with this fake election. So Ken Paxton was up against the fake Republicans, and I hope the people of Texas will point out all of these fake Republicans that are sitting in office right now in both the House and the Senate. Because if we put political pressure on them, maybe they'll step down. Like Mitt Romney now is stepping down. What I love seeing about us putting pressure and shining the light on the corruption, these people are stepping down. Finally, we don't have a Nancy Pelosi. Finally, Mitch McConnell is stepping down from office. So if we keep the public pressure, because you know the best court there is the court of public opinion. Right. And if you and I and the rest of us as America First peoples keep pointing the finger and showing the corruption of these establishment people, the uniparty people, maybe more and more will step out of office. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, I actually have reason for hope because, look, it was a populist victory for the state of Texas with Ken's acquittal. A, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who actually wields a lot of power as also presiding over the Senate, actually ran a very smooth Senate hearing. In fact, frankly, I was a little disappointed with him to begin with that he didn't just send the impeachment back down to the House and say, this was an illegal and unconstitutional impeachment. Send us something back clean. But now that I've seen what he did, and then frankly, he had a statement that he read at the end of the hearing where he actually called out the House and said that there needs to be an amendment to the Constitution so that there's never an abuse of power like this again. So I think I was very pleased that Lieutenant Governor Patrick did what he said he was going to do. So it's not just Ken who's, you know, kind of doing the right thing for the people of Texas, but that frankly, there were senators who didn't personally care for Ken, either had personal vendettas with him or had aspirations for his office, who I'm frankly shocked voted for his acquittal, even though they're Republicans, because the pressure that was put on by the voters, that you had people who were going out and encouraging you to make your voices heard. And trust me, these senators, their phone lines were blowing up. They were overwhelmed. They had no idea that the public was following this closely or that it struck a nerve. And so people who actually valued, if not the voter sentiment, at least their own political future, backed down and voted the right way in Ken's acquittal. And I see that happening across the state right now. People here are furious. They're furious with the economy. They're furious with inflation. They're furious that the government can't lock down the borders and protect us from fentanyl and trafficking and the violence and the crime that comes in from the wave of illegal aliens. They're furious about us sending money over to Ukraine to go secure their border while not securing our own. I mean, they're just mad, and they've had it. And, you know, people's attention has been struck. You know, sometimes we're awake, or asleep. And now, like I like to say, I'm now awake. I'm not woke. And I hear that sentiment across the state and everybody I visit with. And I think especially with this being a presidential election and with President Trump being the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, despite all the lawfare, I think people are going to be in for a surprise at the mass turnout that we're getting ready to have. And let's see them try and kind of game the system with this level of voting.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. In the early 1900s, like 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20, maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See,
Silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, WealthManagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like some, to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
Hey, this is Dr. John Diamond from America Unhinged. You are watching The Amber May Show.
Are you looking for a doctor you can trust? Then look no farther than Dr. Meehan, and you can find him at MeehanMD.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com, for all your health care, supplemental, and telemed needs. And you know what my family did? We shopped at his supplemental store, and we purchased these two items to help support our gut health. These are supporting our gut health, because you know what? The gut health is so important. Our immune system is in the gut. Our serotonin's made in the gut. And so the most Americans, if you know, have a leaky gut. So if you're looking to improve your health, whether you're improving your gut health or your immune system, or you just have something that you need to talk to a physician about, go to MeehanMD.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com. And while you're there, make sure you use the promo code AMBER so you can save some money. And while you're at the website, make sure you set up your telemed appointment and then check out all his supplements that he offers as well. That's MeehanMD.com. Use promo code Amber at checkout.
You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
That's what I want to see. They're definitely going to try, and heck, they might even win. But you know what I think is the difference between this election and 2020? Was the fact that we've had 4 years of shouting at the top of our voice, election fraud, election fraud. We had the midterm elections. I just pointed out to you what happened in Arizona and how just on its face, you could see how it could be, you need to have a new election. And I think people are seeing that. People saw the Gavin Newsom recall and then all of a sudden he's still governor. That made
sense. Yeah, all of a sudden, suddenly, when they're doing all the sign-in for that petition, all of a sudden, signature verification was very important.
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden. Right. I mean, and then we're seeing the two-tier justice system. We're seeing how our federal government doesn't care about the people of East Palestine with that train derail, and that was where I was going with next, or Maui, and we see the land grab that's going on and the wealth transfer that's happening. We saw the wealth transfer that happened during COVID. I mean, we're now seeing them very blatant about the wealth transfer. Do you know why I believe they don't give a rip about rioters and about looters like in California, when you could just walk into a business, steal a bunch of stuff, be gone without prosecution? They're trying to dismantle the middle class and the upper middle class so that we have no money and no power to fight back. They want the super rich and the ultra poor, just like how every country in communist works, the ultra rich and the super poor. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to do wealth transfers with this. How do you think it's feasible for small business owners to take on looters all the time, to have people constantly rape and pillage their goods and services? It's not sustainable. So in the real estate market, with the rioters, they destroy the property so that these big investors like BlackRock and Vanguard can come buy these properties at next to nothing and then jack up the rent price for the next middle class small business owner. And they're doing that also with residential properties. They're outbidding anybody who's trying to buy a house right now. They're outbidding every single one, offering cash, and then the homeowners sell their home to a corporation that's owned by Vanguard or BlackRock. And then what do? They up the rent to the highest point they can pay for to get for the property, which is making people put 2 to 3 times more income into putting a roof over their head than normal. And so they're outing people of being able to really afford to rent a house. So you can't own a house and you can't rent a house. So homelessness is going to go up big time. So the wealth transfer is a real thing that is happening in the United States, and our federal government's very complicit, and frankly, the state governments too. Washington could have stopped the riots, or was that in Oregon? They could have stopped the riots. Both. California could stop the looting. Hawaii governor, he said it. The state of Hawaii wants to take the land. He said it. And a dead person can't fight for their land, can they? No water to the fires. They didn't put any infrastructure into the electric company. Instead, they put it into the green energy. Not saying that I don't believe the electric company started the fire the second time. I don't know what started the fire the second time. Don't know. But there was no power. And we know that from videos from Instagram and TikTok where they had no power. So we're dealing with the American people are seeing a wealth transfer. They see the government doesn't give a rip about them. They see all their money going to Ukraine. Meanwhile, their babies are being, did you know this happened in New York? That a toddler, a 22-month-old toddler in a daycare died of fentanyl because the owners of the daycare were dealing with fentanyl, and they had a kilo of fentanyl when the cops came in to investigate the death of the kids. And there were several others that had cardiac arrest as babies, one-year-old babies having cardiac arrest. Why? Because they got their hands on fentanyl.
Unreal.
And so that's why I think this time, if they succeed in stealing the election, people aren't going to sit back and be like, oh, well, the media said it was the most free and fair election. I don't think they're going to take it this time. What are your thoughts on that?
So honestly, I think I said earlier in the interview, I never really envisioned running for office. But, you know, candidly speaking, I think this country is hanging by a thread. Mm-hmm. Now, I have reason for hope because I think that we have a path where we can return to that bright, shining city on the hill. And part of that entails reelecting President Donald Trump. It also entails electing America First legislators to be to have his back so that we can actually codify his agenda this time. Not have to do everything through executive order, which, you know, the next Democrat president can come in and undo on day one, like Biden did. Or we're going full-blown authoritarian Marxism. You know, I kind of had these two awakening moments. The one was President Trump and seeing what he was able to accomplish. But unfortunately for me, the second one was in 2020 when COVID hit and we had the summer of love. All of a sudden seeing my Republican governor and my then Republican county judge lock us down. And so all of a sudden I was told, you know, well, your business is essential or it's not essential. Well, you can't go to church. Well, your kids can't go to school. Well, here's the other thing. I have a wife who unfortunately about 10 and a half years ago had to have surgery and radiation therapy for a very rare and destructive type of brain cancer. And she went from being my partner to being my oldest dependent. And I have her in a small care facility, about 6 residents. And I was precluded from going and taking her out for our daily visit. So I had to explain to a grown woman through a window screen why she was being punished and that she hadn't actually done anything wrong. And I thought to myself, that's not the role of government. Government's not to tell me how to run my life. Government's not there to protect me. They're there to protect my God-given constitutional rights, God-given, not for the government. And they're certainly not there to all of a sudden, you know, dictate what's best for me or for my family. And the ironic thing about that was there were 4 residents in that facility at the time. They all 4 caught COVID and 2 of them died and they died alone without any family. So at that point in time, I just said, that's it. I've had it. We've got one chance to get this right. If they can do that to our Constitution, which has just been eviscerated, they really nothing is sacred to them. In fact, it's difficult for me to remember to continue to pray for these people because the 3 things that I hold most sacred, you know, God, family, and country, are 3 things that they are constantly trying to tear down because, to your point, they are the bulwarks against authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we've got one chance to get this right. And I think it's the 2024 election and we can usher in another era of prosperity for this country or we can lose it all because it was a republic if we can keep it. Promised. Right.
What's your thoughts on the whole Mitch McConnell continuing resolution calling for no vote of confidence? What do you think about all that that's happening with Speaker of the House and Matt Gaetz and.
Yeah, well, look, I'll be candid. The theme of our campaign, in addition to God, family, country, is it's time for new leadership. And You know, I think that can be very true on the Republican side as well. I mean, it's just, look, Senator McConnell and I have never seen eye to eye, not that that matters to him one whit or that he even has any idea who I am. But
I meant
Kevin McCarthy.
Kevin McCarthy. Yes, that's who I meant, Kevin McCarthy. Sorry about that.
You know, it's interesting because I know President Trump continues to rally support for McCarthy. And what I have heard is that Kevin's not a bad guy. He actually is a good guy, but that he needs to be pressured into doing the right thing. And I think Matt Gaetz right now is trying to be that bayonet in the back because he brokered a deal with the Freedom Caucus and those 20 stalwarts who hung out in that vote and demanded three things. They wanted single subject spending bills. They wanted a balanced budget in 10 years. I believe it was Russ Vogt's budget plan when he was the director of OMB for President Trump that they wanted instilled. And they wanted a vote on term limits. Now, mind you, I doubt that Congress is ever going to pass term limits on itself, but right. At least having that vote be public and be out there so that people can see who actually are doing what they say they're going to do would be a good thing. So, you know, I think Kevin McCarthy has the opportunity to grab this speakership and actually be transformative. And I know President Trump has endorsed him in the past, but I think it is going to take the Matt Gaetzes of the world to hold him accountable and to take him to task to do the things that he said he was going to do. And frankly, I was appalled at that debt ceiling limit vote. And in fact, the Congresswoman who I'm running against, who chairs appropriations, actually closed her office to give him a free runway so that McCarthy was able to negotiate with Biden a 2-year uncapped debt ceiling limit.
Oh, no.
Yep. So that's like saying, hey, kids, you've been very irresponsible with the family credit card, but here, we're going to prove our point and make sure you learn a lesson. Now, here's a credit card without any spending limit. Now, be good this time, all right? It's just ludicrous. Mm. I mean, you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But
yeah. But my point in with Kevin McCarthy is if he has to be pressured to do the right thing, then how is he really a good man? I'm going to guess, John, I don't know you that well, but I'm going to guess you're going to do the right thing because that's your principles. You have guiding principles and you have a North Star and you have certain things that you're not going to do and you're not going to cross this line. And I would hope that you don't need the pressure of other men to make you do the right thing. I would hope that in and of yourself, you're going to do the right thing because that's within, you know, your moral compass to do the right thing, not because you're going to be pressured by a Matt Gaetz.
No, I understand. And trust me, I'm not trying to straddle a fine line because I'm worried that Kevin McCarthy is going to come down on me with the Congressional Leadership Fund against me because Congresswoman Granger, who I'm running against, is actually a key ally of Kevin McCarthy's. But, you know, for whatever reason, and I'm going to go on record, I am Trump or bust. And for whatever reason, President Trump feels like he is somebody that he can work with or somebody that he can use. I agree. If you have to be pressured into standing to your convictions or principles, you maybe don't have convictions or principles. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not going to second guess President Trump on who he's going to endorse or support in that role. But I, like you, would not mind seeing a change in leadership in both the House and the Senate and the RNC for that matter.
Oh, yes. I could not believe Ronna McDaniels got that again. I'm just surprised. I'm a precinct committeeman in Maricopa County. And to see her win that again, I'm just like, this is horrible. This is terrible. So what are the things, if you were to get sworn in as a congressman from Texas, what are some of the issues that you hold dear to your heart that you want to see done as you serve your state?
Yeah, I've been asked that before, and it's kind of like drinking through a fire hydrant because, you know, honestly, what I'd say right now is, what do you like about what's going on in this country right now? I mean, I honestly can't think of a single thing, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I mean, it's everything is in utter chaos. And it's funny, I have family members who say, oh, I can't believe the incompetency of this administration. And I keep saying it's not incompetency. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. They 100% of the time are on the wrong side of these issues. They are trying to bring America to its knees. They don't want it to remain this constitutional republic and the wealthiest country and the greatest country in the history of the world. They want it to become, you don't bring in Marxism or socialism by allowing excellence. What you do is you go down to the lowest common denominator. And so that's what they're trying to do with this country. Mm-hmm. So what I would say, and I'll try and address specifics, but you know, I'm 100% an America First agenda. I think, A, you've got to lock down the borders. You do not have a country if you don't have borders.
And that's
we need
right.
to understand who has illegally entered this country, and we need to sort them out, and we need to deport them and give them the proper avenue to immigrate to this country legally. And if that means having a discussion on legal immigration, I'm all for that. But what I know nobody's up for is just allowing people to illegally flood our borders and have the cartel in control of our sovereignty. The other thing I would say is we have got to get back to the energy dominance that we had and enjoyed under President Trump back in 2020. This feckless regime that's in the White House right now signaled on day one that they were going to wage war against energy in the name of fighting climate crisis, which, get ready, we're going to have all kinds of mandates coming down based on emergency powers for the climate.
Right.
But, you know, we, especially the people here in Texas, we are blessed with a sea of hydrocarbon under our feet, be it natural gas or be it oil. And we were in 2020, we were not only energy independent, we were actually exporting and making money and chipping away at, you know, at our deficit spending with, you know, new revenues that we were bringing in. And so to have the Keystone Pipeline canceled on day one and have this environmental social governance implemented so that banks and institutional investors wouldn't put money into energy deals, he signaled right then and there, don't be putting money into that. Like your point with the Hawaii Electric Company, instead of, you know, hardening the grid, bringing new, you know, clean burning gas plants online, which are reliable and cheap and clean. Instead, they were bringing in this intermittent, you know, renewables with wind and solar, which, oh, by the way, are all reliant on panels and wind turbines and the lithium batteries, all from Chinese communist, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, which in what world does it make our energy dependence dependent on our mortal enemy? So it would be to get our borders under control and unleash our energy, which would have the result of helping to fight this inflationary pressure. And then lastly on that, on kind of the quick 1, 2, 3, it would be fighting to get some kind of fiscal sanity back in the government spending. You know, to say that we don't have a budget and we're just going to go off of what we did last year, well, that was post-COVID. And the COVID spending was through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And this country cannot sustain itself with a $2 trillion a year deficit for the foreseeable future.
No.
We're already over $32 trillion in debt. And I don't know about you, but I keep being told by people that they love their children and their grandchildren. Well, then why are we trying to impoverish them and make them Russian serfs? Because with inflation going up on a growing debt, that means our interest payments alone are going to increasingly become a huge part of our budget, our annual spending. And all of a sudden, you're going to get very rapidly to a point where just the non-discretionary items like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and then the interest payments on our national debt are going to equate everything we bring in tax revenue. While, by the way, the economy is slowing down, and so tax revenue collections, while at a record high in 2022, thanks to President Trump's tax cuts, they're going to be down in the foreseeable future.
And they end, they sunset in 26. So that's only a couple years away. And then our taxes are going to go higher. And right now, families are struggling so much just to get to work with the gas prices here in Phoenix. It's almost $5 a gallon. Groceries are so expensive. It's almost like $300 every 2 weeks. And you're not even buying that much at this point. So, like, it's really, even the six-figure earners are having a really hard time keeping their status of life the way they are. And it's not like they're living an absorbent life. They're just paying their mortgage and, you know, their car payments, their bills, and then maybe they'll go out to lunch or dinner or something. But that's slowly dwindling down where they can't even do simple things like that. Now, if you were to make it to Congress, would you be open to writing a piece of legislation to ban the central bank digital currency?
Yeah, what could go wrong with that, huh? Yeah, no, I am not for trying. Actually, look, I'd be all for just dissolving the Federal Reserve, period. But yeah, to have some kind of digital currency, when we see how they illegally surveil us and how they're then going to track and monitor our wealth and our spending and try and tie it to some kind of carbon score or social governance score, or, and then debank you if all of a sudden you kind of went over your allotment of red meat for the month, or you burned mm-hmm. too much gas in your car, or maybe you had too many drinks at the bar. No, that is plain and simple a bridge too far. I mean, they are trying to take control and measures to monitor us and control us. And digital currency is that not, I'm not ever going to consent to that.
Oh, that's good. And maybe you can reach out to your state legislators to write a piece of legislation. If we can't get it on a national scale right now, maybe we could at least get it on a local level with banning them in every state. Then it for sure you can't have a central bank digital currency if there's laws in every state banning central bank digital currency. So maybe you could put a little bug in their ear to like pass some legislation on to ban yeah. the use of CBDCs. So if people wanted to reach out to you, support you, how is the best way that they can find you?
Sure. So all my social media is on my campaign website, and that's O'Shea, O-S-H-E-A, for the number four, Texas.com. So O'Shea for Texas.com. I list my policy positions there. I've got my interviews. I've got op-eds that I've published and the Daily Caller, Town Hall, Newsmax. And then on top of that, I've got my events. And then I've got a tab where you can volunteer. And if you're not in my district and you like the message and you think that we need more America First candidates in Congress to help push back this just abomination of what's been done to our God-given constitutional rights and the evisceration of the Constitution, then I encourage a campaign contribution, even if it's a small dollar amount, because I'm taking on a 14-term incumbent. She's been in office since the Clinton administration. And while she's not doing well with public donors, she is getting all the lobbyist and PAC money you can say grace over. So,
of course she is. Of course yep. she is. They have no trouble getting money from the establishment. Hey, I have had so much fun talking to you. Thank you for enlightening us and giving us more details on the Ken Paxton impeachment trial. I'm so glad that he got victorious in that. That's so awesome. And I would love to see you in Congress. I hope that, you know, we get to see you swearing in into office. So thank you for running. I mean, even if you don't win, the fact that you even decided to run and try to make a difference for your country is very admirable of you. So thank you so much for putting your hat in the ring and giving your people of Texas a choice in who they want to send to Washington.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Amber. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully we get a chance to visit again and one day meet in person.
That would be great. Thank yeah. you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us today on the Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at the Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on the Amber May Show.